coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello everybody. Happy Tuesday night. Welcome to the 200s, by the way. In all sincerity, it's really closer to like 500 something, as I was just telling the guest. As many as you know, we transformed years ago from Dudes and Beer into Curious Realm. And it's nice to have an award on one shelf over here in the middle shelf underneath Bigfoot for Dudes and Beer for news and politics. And then over here on the shelf behind me next to Pazuzu and the gauntlet, the Infinity Gauntlet, is my award from the Psy Games this year from those guys. So to see the strides that we have made, to see the things that have happened, even that new animated intro that we have, which was a triumph in and of itself. It was something that I have wanted since the show began. And thank you so much, Jason McLean, for helping make that dream come true, man, because it was tough to sit on that for months and months. Jason got to see it ahead of time. A few people got to see it pre-launch, but aside from that, it has been a dirty, dirty secret that has lived on the computer in this studio and on my phone, that nobody's gotten to see until now. So it's really cool to see those things. It's great to see where we've come. It's great to see, every time I look, the guest list just bigger and bigger and bigger and full of amazing guests. Full of amazing guests like our second guest tonight, Darcy Weir, is on the program. We will be talking about his new movie, The Psychic Phenomenon, which, as you know, is one of my favorite topics in the world as a remote viewer. I just went and did a few hours of coverage at the International Remote Viewing Association conference in Cloudcroft, and it's great to be back here live in the studio, guys. So our guest in the first segment tonight, Crystal Perry, her website is blossomingmedium.com. And how can evidence-based psychic mediumship help you? That's what we're going to be getting into. As you guys know, I am the founder of Curious Research. I am all about data and all about things that can be proven with data. But aside from that, also the different ways that our body and intuition lead us to things, and how those things, that was a lot of the Psy Games this year, Crystal, was the idea of how do we quantify precognition? How do we quantify some of these psi abilities that everybody has? And how do we gather data on that? How do we not just game it, but get data from it at the same time? So welcome to the show for the first time, Crystal. How are you tonight?
Thank you, Chris. I'm excited to be here. I'm doing well. It's an honor to be on your show. So thank you for having me.
I am very excited to have you. As I told you before the show, I do a lot of binaural beat music. My son goes to sleep to my chakra meditation album every night. That is probably my biggest badge of honor as a musician, is like an 8-year-old wants to listen to my music every night.
Beautiful.
But the idea of intuition mapping, the idea of being able to, get in touch with your intuition to a point that you can map where it's coming from in your body and what that means, but also that intuitive connection to the chakra and what your different chakras are trying to tell you, I think is a very fascinating concept. What brought you down this road of research to begin with, Crystal?
Self-discovery and help from spirit. I can't take it all credit myself. What spirit had told me when I became a medium, full-time medium, about 6 years ago, was your intuition sits from the neck down. You're not in your head at all. You're truly in your body, and you're picking up physical reactions, physical sensations at all times. We just tune it out because the world is loud. Right? We know that the dog's barking and the spouse is loud and the cars are loud and the freeway's loud and music's loud and everything's loud, that we forget that we can tune into ourself.
Yeah.
Where the quiet is and the stillness is. But your body's talking to you 24/7. And so I go through the chakra system and actually say where you will feel and what you will feel in those areas when your intuition is talking to you. Most people think it's just the gut, and it's not.
Well, and let's start exploring that real quick, because most of my audience knows, I spent years as a youth minister working and teaching people confirmation and all kinds of things. And the idea of, more than religion, getting in touch with yourself and your connection to that divine moment. The way I always explained it to my juniors and seniors was, there will come a point when you are away from this place, when you're away from the safety of your parents and everything else, where you will feel an overwhelming pull. It will feel like a kite string tugging at the back of your belly button. Whatever that means, if it means danger at that moment, whatever it means, perk up and pay attention. And there's that, but this is something different. Because once again, that's an overall generalization of, hey, perk up and pay attention. The universe is saying something, whether it's throwing a hurdle in your path, saying, don't go down the road you're going down, or whether it's saying, hey, the door is wide open now. You need to go down the road that's open. That can be construed in the same exact sensation. If you don't know how to map this to where that is originating from.
True. And we've all had the experience of knowing our intuition and we denied it and acted in the opposite direction and regretted it.
Yep.
Correct. So we know what that feels like.
Yeah. I literally just had that happen. And it was funny because in the remote viewing world, it's called precog, where before a session, you get your target number and you just immediately have like precognitive notions as to like white, hard surface, metallic, things like that. I was preparing all of my gear to go provide all of the AV for the IRVA conference. And I tested a specific soundboard. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to test my other one, but I'm going to bring my other one because it's got more inputs. It's got more bells, more whistles. If I need to use them, they're there. And as I packed, it was a full van going 9 hours one way through the mountains. So whatever I could whittle off, I did. But as I packed, I was like, I should bring that first soundboard. It's only 1 foot by 1 foot. I should bring that other soundboard just in case. And sure enough, overnight, my soundboard blew up. And I had to send my brother 2.5 hours one direction to go buy a new soundboard that I already owned, fully owned, and had the intuitive moment, had the full-on precognitive moment. I should bring that other soundboard with me. Nah, don't listen to that.
Yes, but, sir.
But here's
exactly
a question.
Exactly how that goes.
Here's a question for you, though, and it's something that I pose there and all the time on the show. Is that a precognitive moment, or is that a moment of manifestation?
I think it's your intuition talking to you, and you talked yourself out of it. You got in your ego and your head like, I have enough. I'm fine.
Yeah.
And then it was truly your intuition was right.
Yeah.
It nudged you. It's always a gentle nudging.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. That's what's interesting, is that much like with manifestation, and this is something that I try to explain to people. They're like, I've tried manifesting and I can't seem to make it happen. And it's like, you may have manifested your answer, believe it or not. It may be that what you're trying to manifest, you don't necessarily need that or that in that way. You know, that lack of actual poof moment may be the poof moment in and of itself. And that moment of intuition of, hey, maybe this isn't what I actually need, or maybe I'm asking for it in a way that I don't need it, or that is unhealthy for me in that kind of way.
yeah, there could be certain times that that happens, certain things that don't matter as much, but big things like you, and then you had to go buy it. Yeah. That's when you start to trust it. And intuition is a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets. If you tuned into that and then, oh, this is my parking spot up front at the grocery store, and this is my XYZ, and this is my, and that you're tuning in and tuning in and tuning in, you're strengthening that muscle. So you know when it kicks in, I need to act.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
We've been taught to dull it out, and it starts when we're young. I say it's like right around the age we go to school, 5 or 6, because the parents are teaching us society programming. You're telling them something. I really need to do this, mom, or I need to go over there, or I need to do that. No, no, no. Shh, be nice. I don't want to sit with Uncle John. Just be nice. Be kind. You know, you get dumbed down a little bit by parents and schooling and society, that you start to go, okay, everyone else knows more than I do. So we forget that we actually have all the answers.
Interesting. Interesting. Now, when it comes to that, especially with children, that was one of my favorite things about Cygames, that they actually had a room dedicated for, like, teaching the children mindsight, things like that. How do you begin, especially with clientele, things like that, how do you begin to teach tuning into that moment of intuition to somebody?
All the clients that I see that have young children that ask me, I always say, empower them, ask them, what do you feel? What do you sense? What do you see? What do you know? You're working on their clair abilities so they can validate. I see this. I see that. You know, some children as young as one that are starting to talk, I see grandpa, I see grandma, and they're in spirit.
Yeah.
And if you're dismissing your kid, oh, no, you don't. That's okay. No, it's just your imagination. You're actually doing them a disservice. So the more you can encourage your child to bring out their own inner awareness and be confident in their inner awareness, there's no problem when they become an adult.
That does bring up a good point. And that is the utter idea of being confident in yourself and being self-assured, even within a group context. I had recently seen the actual, personality declaration on that. Instead of introvert or extrovert, it's outrovert. And somebody who does not go with the group dynamic in that kind of way, where it's like, okay, yeah, cool. I appreciate what everybody's saying, and I understand why you're saying it. I just can't go along with that. And being okay with that, being self-assured in the fact of, and even whenever I taught the kite string to juniors and seniors in high school, the idea was, if you say that walking through the door of a location and your friends aren't with you, you need to consider that friendship real quick, and what that friendship is about. Because if they don't respect it, hey guys, like, I know you guys want to be here, but I don't need to be here right now. I gotta go. Like, I gotta split. And if they aren't all right with that, you need to really consider that group of friends, because they are not there for your best interests. They are there for their own edifications. And that's a hard, hard truth to come to for a lot of people, Crystal. The idea of, because yes, we're taught that that is, quote, a selfish concept. Mm-hmm.
We're not really society. Given the permission.
Yeah.
You know, we're just not given the permission. And it's not just our parents, which do us that disservice. It's as we go to school and, you know, the teachers are like, oh, it's okay. Well, let me just do it, or let me do this, or, you know, let little Johnny talk where little Jane wants to express something that's really in her heart. You kind of get dismissed. So pretty soon you just go with the program, like, they're not going to listen anyway. I'm not going to say it anyway. I'm going to start to doubt because nobody wants to hear it. Right. And then you get disempowered, and as you lose that, my favorite thing to say is, so let's say you're 5 or 6, you're going to school, right? And suddenly the teacher is telling you, oh, little Johnny, you're so good at math. Look how good at math you are. And you're little Johnny and you just want to finger paint and bang two trucks together. You could care less about math. Yeah. Yet as you grow through life, you know, all you know is you've been told you're good at math. You've brought home the awards, the certificates. Now you're 18 and graduating and, you know, your friends are saying, what are you going to do? And you're like, I don't know, but I'm good at math. You've taken that program and it's been shoved down your throat. You haven't really tapped in.
Yeah.
So you're kind of lost in the world for the last 15 years. What do I do? Where do I go? What do I really like to do? I see a lot of clients that are early out of school deciding, what am I supposed to do? Do I even have any creative abilities? Do I have any spiritual gifts? What is this? I don't even know why I'm tapping in now, but I'm inquisitive. So it's society program. It's not just one and done. It's all society.
Well, and you know, that brings up a huge point that I bring up regularly on the show and on shows that I talk about specifically, or that I talk on whenever I'm a guest, specifically whenever I'm on talking about binaural beats. And that is the idea of frequency. And frequency is not just a color in the chakra scale, everybody. It's not just a musical note or a hertz tone. It is your frequency of thought form as well. And as they would say in AA, the stinking thinking, you know, how often are you, because it becomes a self-manifesting prophecy. And unfortunately, the vibration of, I guess the only way to put it is dark or negative. Negative vibration is sadly a little more sticky than positive vibration. It's a lot easier to vibrate negatively than it is positively. It's a lot harder to always see something good out of a situation than to immediately just go negative. It's fascinating to see that and to see that exactly how that echoes right into this, because it's an important concept to understand that you're giving the agency over to that negative thought at that point. You're giving that negative thought literal consent to exist. You don't have to give it consent. You'd much like the idea of arguing or fighting, because you want to be right. You don't have to be right. I know it sounds very hippy dippy and like, you know, like, and don't get me wrong, Chris did go through an ayahuasca ceremony, but it sounds very ayahuasca-esque, the idea of like, nah, man, just lose your ego and quit fighting.
Yeah. You know? It's so easy for people to think of bad things happening, car wrecks, or what if I get cancer, or what if my family dies? It's so easy. And I don't know, maybe it goes back to our caveman days of, I got to watch out. I got to be prepared. Yeah. It's not easy to say, what if I win the lottery? What if I have all my bills paid off? What if I have a great marriage? Like, it's not so easy because of programming. Everyone is for me. Everyone's in victimhood. You know, it's so hard to stay and float above that. So I get what you're saying with, you're calling it negative. I call it dense energy. Yeah. It's just heavier.
Yep.
It's much heavier energy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way to put it, actually. I prefer that. And I think I'll probably use that from now on, because it is the density of it. It's what weighs you down. And the thing is, like, you don't have to carry the suitcase. You don't have to at all. Yeah. And it's pretty fascinating, the idea of that, not just emotional, but the spiritual release of that. Once you kind of grasp that concept of, no, I don't have to put my energy into that. Like, good Lord, if you want the other person to really win, keep on fighting, you know, like, just keep giving them your energy and shovelfuls and fighting with them. Or you can go Freddy Krueger on it and just revoke your consent from the system and just go like, yeah, I don't believe in you anymore. I no longer give you credence. I no longer give you consent to take that energy from me. And it's pretty empowering to get to that. So when did you begin the process of teaching people to map their intuition, Crystal?
Probably as soon as I became a medium. It was clear that people wanted more information, but they didn't know how to go about it. So it really started, I really started getting downloads with intuition and with our clairabilities and how they're connected. Most people have heard of clairvoyance, but there's so many others that go along with it. And as the universal language of spirit, we don't use a verbal language when we're talking to deceased loved ones or relatives or our spirit guides or whoever. Their mouths aren't moving all the time. Like in your dreams, you don't really have a person that's moving their mouth. You're telepathically picking up what they're saying. You're emotionally tied into that. You're sensing, you're feeling, you're knowing. So you're using your clairs. And where does that map in the body? And so the two of those came to be. It started being one of the first classes I was started teaching was connecting to your spirit guides and angels and how to trust into your intuition, where that is, how that feels in the body. Right out the gate. So 6+ years ago when I started with mediumship, I could just see that there was a hole. People wanted the information, but there was this hole. How do I get there? Where's the bridge? So I had to tap into spirit, meditate. What is the answer? Help me out. And it's evolved since then. I like to think that it's very enlightening and it's easy for people to understand. So I continue to teach on a regular basis these same skills, whether it's on Zoom or in person, that they can understand. And it's simple. I simplify things so you're not lost in the concept of everything.
Well, and not only that, what I think is really important there, because we have tons of mediums on the show. I don't have scammers on my show. It's the only way I can put it. It's people that I know have been vetted by others. And in addition to that, everybody that I have on my show is somebody that empowers the people that they work with to get their help from themselves, not to keep 100%. Coming back to them, because they're just a channel and a medium by which to get you on your path of right. They aren't there to see you every Thursday continuing for the next 33 years, because that's what they're trying to do. And there are plenty of those mediums out there, folks, much like remote viewing instructors. There's tons of people that will gladly take your money and say that that's what they're doing. A true medium is there for that connection, for that moment. And then from that point, they're there to point you in the direction that you need to go with sound and good advice. So I appreciate the fact that what you're doing is the idea of being able to get people on their path of finding this answer themselves. How do they tune into themselves and basically become the medium themselves in that kind of way?
Yeah. Empower yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, with the evidence-based mediumship, how does that work?
So that is, I consider myself an evidence-based medium. That is when I'm bringing in evidence from the deceased, the departed, of this is truly their person. I will never tell someone your grandma's here and she loves you very much. That goes way into the scamming part of it for me. They better be bringing me evidence. Dates, times, names, the way they look, the way they act, what they left behind, details of things. So when I'm in a session, I'm giving that to someone and they can absolutely trust to know this is their son, this is their daughter, this is their mother, without a doubt. And then the messages come. But I want the evidence first so that person knows this is truly their loved one. Leaving no doubt.
Well, once again, I think that is hugely important because it brings people also to a point of comfort and understanding of what's going on, and not necessarily the want of confirmation, which is what most psychics and mediums and the charlatans out there selling stadiums full of people and theaters full of people that they're cold reading, things like that. So,
I want details.
Yeah, precisely.
And the other thing you mentioned, you mentioned something and it triggered in me. When I see a client, if they want another reading right away and I don't feel that's correct for them, I'll tell them, you need to wait. You need to wait at least 6 months or a year. What came through today needs to integrate. If you came back in a month, it's going to be the same story, same information.
Yeah.
I don't want someone hanging on to my every word. I want them to feel empowered when they leave and good enough that I never have to see them again, really. Right.
Yeah.
Unless there's another loss or something like that, but I will tell people. And I'm also honest. I've had, you know, two or three in all my years of doing this, there's been two or three times where nothing's coming through. It's like crickets on the other side. And I'll tell people, nothing's happening. I'm going to refund your money. This isn't working for me. And go see a different medium or something. Sometimes I can't make the dead talk to me. I can't make conversation happen.
Yeah.
That isn't here.
Yeah. And that is something that, I mean, maybe it's just because I'm a big fan of Harry Houdini, but I do not abide spiritualism in that kind of way. I don't buy into most seances that go on, or things like that. It's just where I am. I know the mediums that I have worked with who are mediums that are really amazing at what they do, and they do things beyond walking into a room and going, oh, there's something that happened here. They do amazing and fantastic things. And have there was one, Rocky Paul Morneau. He is no longer with us, but I will never forget that. And my buddy Ken Newton, if you're out there listening, Kenny, he is one of the most grounded individuals in the world, man. Former military, all kinds of things. He is not a woo-woo, so to speak, kind of person. And when he called me up and was literally like, hey, Chris, I have somebody here who needs to talk to you, and I need you to just be quiet and let them talk. And Rocky got on the phone, Crystal, and went off for like an hour and a half, told me things about my life that, like, my wife doesn't know.
Wow.
Told me things all kinds of things where it was like, wow, okay. They nobody know this. That was wild. And I talked to him for years. He would call me up sometimes, and it was one of those whenever I got off the phone and Ken was like, if he ever calls you, just know, be quiet. Just be quiet and listen. Until he stops talking, and then he'll say, like, what do you think? And some of the things that he would call me with, Crystal, were beyond revelatory in my life. And that was a hard, hard case of accepting wholeheartedly that somebody had connection with the universe in different way. And I'm a former seminarian. Like, I went into the seminary because of a religious experience I believe I had. But he was connected in a different way. And he's kind of, I would say Rocky would be my gold standard as far as, like, what I'm, when I'm looking for a medium, that's the kind of thing where it was like, wow. He told me things that nobody knew. And that was really crazy.
And that's beautiful to have that experience. If you're a skeptic and you don't have any of that, and then something revolutionary changes your mind like that, that's when you know it's truth. I've had clients that I've told something to and they've denied, oh, that can't happen. I had one today. I saw her about a year and a half ago. She came in because her father had passed this year. But anyway, she said, you told me something a year ago about my niece, that she was going to get a new job. And I said, there's no way. She loves her job. She has loved that job for years. And I left saying, there's just no way. She said, 6 weeks later, there was a fight with her boss. She instantly left and got some better job somewhere else. And I mean, I was in shock and she was in shock. And sometimes something will come out that's futuristic.
Sure.
So a client will just doubt it. Oh, that can't be true. Or I'll predict a pregnancy, right? Or something. And they'll just deny. And then when it happens, their jaw drops. You're like, how did that happen? I don't know. It's spirit. I didn't know anything about you. I'm an open channel and I'm leaving my mouth open to let it come through, like your friend Rocky.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fascinating because the more I remote view, and I am by no means any medium. I am by no means clairvoyant, Crystal. I have always said, if anything, I might be a bit empathic, things like that. But aside from that, nope. Not any kind of future seer. I did dream work and that kind of stuff, sure, but, and even interpretation of my own dreams. However, the more I remote view and get into that, the more I fully understand and relate to what Lynn Buchanan says, which is we're all psychic. We all have this. The only difference, it's no different than, like, as long as you have the means by which to swing a bat, you can hit a baseball. There are some people who are just natural born Ty Cobbs and really good at swinging a baseball bat. And other people have to work at it and work at it really hard. And it's no different than intuition. There are some people who are just naturally tapped in. And despite what society does, despite what the world does to them, they go through their whole life with that connection and with just that innate ability to be able to navigate the universe. And those, I guess the only way you could possibly put it is maybe blessings and curses, what have you. That happen in a different way. And then there are people who walk through life with a rain cloud and just can't seem to escape the Eeyore tale that is pinned upon them, you know? And I get a little weepy at that because I know people like I would even say I was that for a long time in life, you know? So how do you begin getting somebody who is followed by that cloud, who is under that cloud? How do you begin to get them to see some light around that cloud, Crystal?
If it's just a psychic reading, I will definitely tell them, you know, look at all the experiences that have brought you to this moment, that even if you're in that cloud and that haze, my dog left and my husband left and my... everything's so sad and I lost my job and
yeah,
but look at the experiences that it brought you to how much information came to you throughout the years to get you to this moment, because everything is an experience and it's here for our awareness, for learning, for higher learning period. Once you can see the bigger picture, and that's what spirit shows me, is zoom out and put a spotlight on it, not a tiny little pin light on your life. There's so much happening around you for your best and highest good, but instead you want to wallow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think another, and one of our listeners actually on YouTube, Benno, brought up the point of specifically judging, and the idea of people accepting things with an open heart and not judging others. And I think that that is a hugely, hugely important part of the equation, that, I guess kind of that live and let live mentality, that understanding that, we all may be unified on a bridge, but we all have a different path that we're walking on that bridge, you know, and understanding that about everybody, that, you know, we are all a conglomeration of not just our preternatural beliefs, but the beliefs that we have come to understand through our experiences. And some people have had horrible experiences that have brought them to very, very harsh, black or white, contrasted pictures of reality, you know, and, you just have to understand that not everybody sees things with the beautiful thousand shades of gray that make up an actual black and white TV image, you know?
Yeah. And how long have they carried that burden that now it's a part of their personality and they say to themselves, well, this is just how I am.
Yeah. Yeah. And just accept it. And this is just how everybody sees me anyway. So why would I change? And it's fascinating to see that. And it's somewhat sad as well when you see that happen, especially when you see that, because that cloud can spring up at any point. I know people, Crystal, that like it sprang up when they were 50 and it ain't gone away. There was just that one thing that rocked their life to a point where they can't get past it. you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And what Spirit has told me is do not let one moment in time define you, whatever that might be. Maybe someone went to jail when they was 20 or committed a crime and they're still living with it for all these years, or you know, got divorced or had a loss or some major accident and they're still in it. And Spirit's like, that moment in time is not your whole life.
Yeah.
It's a moment and it's here to realign you, redirect you and move forward. But you're right. So many people stay stuck in that heaviness of it.
Well, how can they begin to break that cycle, so to speak? How can they begin to interrupt that frequency of thought? And which, I guess at that point, because that's not necessarily intuition, but their intuition can lead them to where they need to go. So how do they reconnect?
The first thing is kind of detaching from other people's judgment. Like, is this something my mom taught me? My dad taught me? Is this something someone was taught me? You talked about judging. If you grew up in a home where, let's say your mom was always talking about the neighbors and can you believe they did that? And can you believe they did this? You're growing up in that environment and you're kind of learning it. It's unlearning, asking yourself, is this really me? Or did I pick something up from my parents, my mom or my dad or my child or whoever? Is this me? And you can change that. It's the whole reality of shifting yourself, you know? So I think it's baby steps. I think it's too much for people all at once. I think having some hope and looking at things in a different light will help.
The baby steps is important, and that's something that I've always tried to explain to anybody. It's something I always hear my monk spiritual director from the seminary, who, like you said, you prefer to see somebody after months, so that they can see how these things evolve and weave into their life and stuff like that. He saw me at least twice a month when I was in the seminary, and almost once a month after the seminary, whenever I lived in Dallas. And consistently his response to situations would be, so how's that working out for you? Because I'd come in with the same problem all the time. And it was like, so how's that solution working out for you? You figured out that's not the solution yet? Cool. All right. Well, I guess I'll see you next month.
And sometimes it takes a little bit of shadow work. Is this me? Am I choosing the same pattern? Is this really the people in my life? Is it where I'm placing myself? Do I need to get out of this job or this marriage or whatever? Like, it takes some questioning of self that you're just not taught as a child. You're not.
Yeah.
Lost that empowerment. So those people that stay in victimhood, it just feels like the next natural progression and step to stay there.
Well, and let's discuss that real quick, especially the concept of shadow work, because I don't know if a lot of people are truly familiar with that concept, the idea of literally working on your darker side, coming familiar with it and realizing why it's there and preternaturally what it's about so that you can avoid it. So go ahead with that for a minute.
Shadow work to me is, I'll just use an example, like if you're always angry, trying to figure out why that is it the people around you? Probably not. It's something coming from the depths of you. So asking yourself, is this fear? Is this judgment? Am I in doubt? Do I think I'm inadequate? You know, those sorts of questions that go deeper inside to the darker side of you. So you can express that to yourself and let your brain get wrapped around it of, oh, I see why I've had this patterning of whatever, because I keep doing the same thing and looking at different ways. There's plenty online you can find about shadow work. Therapists always help, or they'll question you, how'd that make you feel? Yeah. And you're going into, well, it made me feel this. Well, why? And you're just kind of, you're taking a question or a statement and you're digging until you're feeling like, oh, that's the root of the problem. When I was 8, not now at 35, that my spouse left me or cheated on me, I felt betrayed. I felt hurt then. I felt inadequate then, and I've carried that with me, kind of thing.
Yeah. And in that same way, you've just learned to psychically and emotionally karate reflex to the same exact thing to protect yourself. that you did when you were eight, you know, which, yeah, may not be the most healthy thing for you. It probably wasn't the most healthy thing for you at eight. And it's probably not the most healthy psychological barrier to keep up in your life at this point. So, that idea of, once again, taking that consent back, the idea of agency, and that, yes, even though you've done this for years, doesn't mean that you can't change, that you can't make the decision to stop, at least thinking in that kind of pattern.
Yeah. Every day is a new day. I mean, was it George Frankl, the guy in, I should have thought about this before, but the thought's coming to me now, that was in the Holocaust, that he just said, you know, you have to change their thought pattern every day, that he was starved and he was beaten and he was gassed. And then he came out and wrote a book, you know, later on about it. You change your thought in the moment. I can choose this. I can choose better. I'm a good person. That sort of thing, of talking yourself off the cliff constantly. So it becomes a pattern. Now it becomes a habit, and now it's part of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of that, especially when it comes to losing judgment, losing things like that, comes to losing preconceived notions. And not only that, the preconceived notions and the stereotypes that you think are there. But I think a lot of it also comes in patience and stopping. Three steps back, three deep breaths. I think even psychically and psychologically, Crystal, and parapsychologically, I think too many people are having the conversation on the way to the table. And when I say that, it's the idea of, like, if you're sitting in traffic and you're waiting on a meeting and you're having that conversation that's going on at the meeting, you're preemptively thinking about what that other person is saying. You are literally putting words in their mouth. You are loading that conversation before you ever get there. You're putting intent behind those words. You may be getting angry because of those words. Like, quite literally, this is what psychologically goes on. So
your body's now prepared for fight or flight.
Yeah. Like, you have literally put a nice skim and a couple of bricks down for the wall to be built before you ever get there. And I think that a lot of people kind of do the same thing when it comes to that idea of intuition and letting intuition in. It's that idea of a preconceived notion of something that you're not controlling. Something that you have zero control. All you can do is control your reaction. And like you said, even myself, years of teaching it, things like that. What did I do all of a week ago, packing my stuff? I didn't listen.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it happened. You know?
And that was a clear sign to you, and you knew.
Soon as I turned the power on and it didn't work, I was like, yep.
Yep.
That's all I could do. I couldn't even get mad.
There's times when we do something, we know our intuitive hit came in and it was strong, yet we change it because I don't want to let someone down or I don't want to hurt someone's feelings. Again, goes back to societal program. I'll use an example. Please. Of a young girl I knew that she said she knew on her wedding day that this wasn't the right thing to do. Ooh. Yet I went through with the marriage anyway. They had already paid for the wedding and I already knew his family and I didn't want to let someone down and yada, yada, yada. Yet 2 months later, they were divorced or annulled or whatever it was.
Yeah.
She knew in the moment. Yet we do a lot of that self-sabotage because I don't want to let someone down. I don't want to hurt someone's feelings. You're letting yourself down.
Yeah.
Your spirit is screaming, don't do this or do this or bring or pack your, you know, board. And we're denying it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's often what I tell people whenever people ask me why I left the seminary. My joke is I heard the same voice that asked me to join say, Johnny, thanks for playing. What are his parting gifts? But in all reality, it was the fact of, yes, the same exact thing that called me to be there and to just go listen Just go listen. Go give it the chance. Was the same thing that called me to leave and to understand that that was not how I was supposed to serve, but that was not how I was meant to serve. And I know tons of good people and have counseled numerous people into wearing the collar. And they're amazing priests out there doing amazing things, working in vocations offices with youth. And, you know, it's fantastic. But had I not listened, and I went through, as many, many seminarians do, went through years of depression afterward because I felt like I left a calling. Because I felt like I had turned my back on something.
Or you know, let someone down.
Or that I let somebody down. More than anything, that I'd let a lot of family down and that I'd let my whole parish down, you know, who had prayed for me every Sunday. Like I knew they were praying at Mass for me, things like that. So, yeah.
Well, and then as a human, you're sitting in that shame and that guilt and that blame and that judgment over and over. And now you're back to the victimhood. And that is really not how Spirit meant for it to be.
No.
Here is the nudge. Here's the nugget. Act on it.
Yeah.
That's it. It's neutral with Spirit. That's what the Spirit world has taught me, is that it's not as big as you people are making it. You're blowing this all out of proportion. Learn from this nugget and move on. Learn from this nugget and move on.
That is a beautiful way to put that, because it really is the fact of, I think people put in, and when it comes to all of this, it's the fact of people put a lot more pertinence on the extreme fine points than the gross broad strokes, you know. And the fact is, you know, much like anything, yes, we can all paint. We can't all be a Rembrandt, but we can all paint. You know, we can all do this. We can all be in touch with our intuition. And like you said, the more you try and get connection with it, the more you give it credence and recognize it and even reward yourself when you listened. Don't be afraid to pat yourself on the back.
100%. You're strengthening that muscle. The biggest thing people need to know is, with your intuition, it works moment by moment, and it comes in when it's needed. And that's it. It's not on 24/7, because your body don't need to run on it 24/7.
Yeah.
For example, when you're driving down the road and suddenly you say, oh, I should slow down, and you look over and there happens to be a patrol car. That happened in the moment. That didn't happen at 7 in the morning when you were brushing your teeth. It happened when you needed it, like you're bored.
Yeah.
Here's the moment. Here's the action.
Yep.
And move on.
Yeah.
And that's how quick Spirit works. And that's why it's so easy to dismiss, because it comes in and it's out. It comes in and it's out. And if it's something really meant for you, it will keep nudging and nudging and nudging until, you know, you make a choice, whatever way you're going to go with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I will keep using that example of my soundboard, because literally it's one of those, like, that's why we carry spares. That's why we have more than one. There were all kinds of things that literally stacked up to me just ignoring that typical decision of, yep, bring the extra pound and a half. Bring the extra pound and a half of weight and find a way to squeeze it in. You know, and it's hard. It's once again, I could look at it as a negative thing. I could look at it as a negative thing all day long of, I missed, but like I teach my son, missing a basket is your chance to learn why you missed the basket. It's even one of the things that I say whenever I'm talking about remote viewing at a conference, things like that, is your misses are more important than your hits. Because if you can learn to own your misses, you're going to learn a lot more about you, why you go down rabbit holes, you know, things like that, things that will help reinforce the good things, you know, that will help keep you on a good path. So you've got to be willing to at least admit your part in what's going on.
And we're here to fail. We are here to learn and fail and learn and fail. I mean, Thomas Edison you know, didn't create the light bulb the first time. In fact, he says, I didn't fail 100,000 times over. I learned.
Yeah.
I learned what didn't work.
Yeah. I found 100,000 ways not to make a light bulb.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we're here to learn. And if we keep it neutral and lose the judgment of self and others, then it goes by so much quicker. The pain is so much less. It just, and we move on. Okay. That didn't work. Let's move on. Next time I'll remember the board. Next time I'll do it. Or next time I'll really pay attention. That was my reminder to, next time.
Yeah, exactly. That was a true moment of kite string pulling that I tripped over the string and did not pay attention to it. So we've got you for another few minutes, Crystal. In the last few minutes, how can people who may already be on this path, how can people who are on this path already begin to share it with others that they think they, in a non-confrontational way? It would be the only, you know, you never want to force enlightenment upon people. But there are definitely, I think everybody has somebody in their life that they would like to just kind of like shine the really bright laser at and like cat them over somewhere and be like, no, seriously, pay attention over here. It's shiny here too. So how can they begin to open hearts, open minds in that kind of way? How can they begin to, maybe bring somebody to a point of recognizing that their intuition is speaking to them, screaming to them even.
Yeah. Empower them, kind of like we said with the young children. Ask them, what do you see? What do you sense? What do you feel about this? What do you just know about this to be true? And it will start to trigger something in them. I'm feeling this. I'm sensing that. And you're acting on the clairs. You're acting on the universal language that you came with as a soul. We didn't come out of the womb speaking Spanish or English or French. We came in speaking this universal language of spirit, of energy, and start asking questions that are related to energy for others. Mm. Have them start looking inward like, I don't even know how I feel. Most people don't know because they haven't checked in. Right? They know that they'll get the goosebumps when something happens, or they'll know they'll get a sensation when they walk into a room of, I don't really want to be here. But pretty much after that, they don't know much more. Start to just ask your children and the people around you, your friends and your coworkers, you know, how'd that make you feel when that happened? Did you learn something out of this? Right?
Mm. Yeah.
Sometimes people are very kinesthetic and they can touch and they can feel something or electricity and stuff that will move through them. And everyone's a little bit different. Everybody's clair is a little bit stronger than another. Like let's say I might be strong with my clairvoyance skills and you're strong with your claircognizant, where you just know. I just know things to be true, right? I can't compare to what you have, but we're all speaking the same language of energy.
Yeah. Yeah. And how can people, I guess, interpret that energy? Because I think that comes to a huge part of things. There's a lot of people, even with that idea I was talking about with having the conversation on the way to the table. That's why I am a big fan of, let's not text. I understand the want of an email back and forth for a chain, but let's talk on the phone. Like, let's have an actual conversation where real vibrations happen back and forth. You know, like, you get a different understanding of pertinence from people's voice than you do from an email and commas on a screen. There's a lot that can be read into those things. So, how can we begin to clarify that emotional noise that can get in the way of intuition sometimes?
Well, I always tell people it's the very first thought that comes in, and then your ego is going to be the second thought. So go back to the very first thought you were thinking, like, here's your board. I should bring the board. No, I shouldn't. That's okay. I'll be fine. Go back to the very first thought that you were thinking. And as long as you practice that, when it comes in, you're already strengthening that muscle. Even if you make the wrong choice, you're like, no, I'm fine, but I know I should, and I'll wait. You're still practicing that. So your ego will be always 2 or 3 seconds delayed from your intuition. It's the natural ability of, here's your answer. Here's your answer. This is why muscle testing works so well. Here's your answer. It's immediate.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And once again, that karate reflex that our psyche seems to have is really fascinating to me. And that's something that I explain to people with remote viewing, is the idea that it's the true connection to unconscious, and just allowing things to flow. The second you start giving it definition, you've attached ego to it. You've got analytic overlays now, things like you've started using nouns instead of adjectives. Instead of descriptors, you're using concretes. And it's fascinating to see that because, your intuition works in exactly the same way. As soon as you have that concrete thought, you have attached your ego to it in some way, and you need to trace it back to that original moment of what you thought. So,
and trying to stay in the flow of it. And that's the hardest for people.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Thank you so much for the time tonight, Crystal.
Oh, you're so welcome.
The hour flew by. It was an amazing conversation. These are, every once in a while we get thick and spiritual on the show. And this, I think, is one of those nights, because it's something that I think is hugely important. And whether you practice psychic mediumship or have a psychic or have a medium or have a spiritual director, folks, whether you go to church on a Wednesday and Sunday, I don't care. What I have always said is you need to be connected to something bigger than you in the universe. I don't care if it's a dog or the tree next door, but call it whatever you want. But understand that you are just a drop of oil in the universal machine. But without you, the machine doesn't work right. You know, we are all an integral part of that universal machine and connected to it. So we have a unique opportunity to help each other navigate it and to be there for each other. And I think teachings like what you are trying to give people with that intuition mapping, Crystal, are hugely important. Where we can learn
and
the
thank
sources.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Before we let you go, one last time, let the audience know where they can go to find your website, where they can go to schedule sessions, where they can go to contact you for anything they may need, Crystal.
Yeah, Chris, my website is blossomingmedium.com, and you can scroll under my services tab to book a session with me. I do half hour and hour readings. I am on Facebook, Blossoming Medium Crystal Perry. I'm on Instagram, blossoming.medium001. I have a book out. You can buy it on my website or on Amazon, called Trusting Your Intuition and Connecting to Your Spirit Within. And I'm out there. I'm trying to do it, doing readings every day. So I'm probably not on socials as much as I'd like. This is what the cover of my book looks like,
oh,
Trusting Your Intuition. So you can get that on Amazon or on my website. Just little nuggets in there that will help direct you on your path of where you're going and how to get there. And then sit with it. I tell everyone, just because I'm teaching doesn't mean I'm the only teacher. Sit with it. How does this feel for you?
I used to tell every one of my seniors at the end of the year, like, I may have been lying to you all year, man. Go out there, ask questions. The day you stop asking questions, you should stop drawing breath. You should be asking questions till the day you die. So, yeah, go out there, read. Research, find out, explore, and be Magellan with it. Be fearless with it. Be all right with it. Thank you so much.
And empower yourself.
Exactly.
That's what we talked about tonight. Let yourself be empowered by what you're feeling, because it's valid for you.
That's
right. The next person has feelings that are valid for them.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. And any psychiatrist that tells you different may need to go see a psychiatrist. Crystal, once again, thank you so much for the time. I look forward to having you on again.
Have a wonderful evening.
Absolutely. You too. Take care. We'll be sending links for the episode, all that kind of good stuff. So we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Chris.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Amazing conversation, folks. And once again, one of those things, like I know I get a little mushy sometimes. I know I get a little vibey. Chris is a little woo. you know, but I will be honest with you. The day that you learn that your consent is yours, your consent into any system is yours, even your consent of pass, fail, what have you, and your concept of that in the universe, it is a beautiful, empowering day for you. So take that back, people. Understand what your consent and your agency means in the universe. When we come back from this quick commercial break, we will be joined by filmmaker and director Darcy Weir. We will be talking about his new documentary, The Psychic Phenomena. We will be talking about psychics, remote viewing, things like what we just talked about last week. We will be talking about that connection to non-human intelligence, non-local intelligence, and how it may feed into the UFO, UAP phenomena. More about that with Darcy Weir right after this.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the field observation and encounter log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO, UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that quick commercial break. Thank you so much for hanging on through that. Also, thank you so much to our sponsors, especially True Hemp Science. If you are a user of CBD products like I am, stop on by TrueHempScience.com today. I have been using True Hemp Science products for at least the last five years of my life, and I love them. They are absolutely amazing. Christopher Lynch and the folks at True Hemp Science use a spigyric process where every part of the hemp plant is used. Everything from seeds, stems, roots, leaves, buds, fibers, everything is used, reused, combusted, and reused until nothing remains, creating an amazing spigyric product that it is complete with terpene profiles and all. Stop on by, check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website that you want to go to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more and get two edibles on your way out the door for free as well. Our guest in this segment is the amazing Darcy Weir. Stop on by his website, occultjourneys.com. He is an awesome filmmaker. I am so, so happy to have him on today to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is actually the title of his new documentary, which is Psychics and the Phenomenon. Welcome to the show for the first time, Darcy. How are you today?
Good, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Man, I am so excited to have you on. I love watching your films. I watch, and my wife knows, like even my Samsung TV, the default channel that it's set to is like The Unexplained. Like you turn on the TV and immediately William Shatner is just welcoming you with weird stuff. This is the stuff that I watch 24/7 in the background while I work, things like that. I just sit back and like osmosisize documentaries like yours regularly. And what I love most about your work is that there is no slant. I have yet to see a slant. I mean, there's a lot of people that cover a lot of topics in these genres, Darcy, but a lot of people cover them with what I believe is a very distinct purpose. And like, they've already got a message aside from truth and following points. They tend to cherry pick data. They tend to look at things in a very different way as a means by which to push an agenda. Okay. And I don't see a lot of agenda pushing in your documentary making. Yours is very much more photojournalism, where it's let's follow the data where it takes us and see what amazing horizon there is with this stuff. So thank you for that, for everything that you do to maintain that.
That's high praise. Thank you. I mean, I think there is bias because I obviously believe some of the stuff is real that I'm presenting in my documentaries. But, you know, there's always a chance that some of it's BS. And so I'm open to the skeptical side. I'm open to the, you know, conspiracy, hidden truth sort of reality side as well.
Yeah.
I just kind of bounce back and forth between the two.
Well, and the thing is, though, and this is why I say this, because A, you had Transmedium, which is a beautiful documentary about USOs, UFOs, UAPs, that whole burgeoning field of study in the world of ufology in the last 10 years. And then back to back with that, you came out with the Corey Good documentary about it. So it's like, yes, you're talking about UFOs and supporting that, and then you completely come out and expose the seedy underbelly of ufology, which is beautiful. Once again, it's the fact of you're just following things where they take you. Sure, do you have an intent as a filmmaker? Absolutely. But that's what I mean by you aren't pushing a paradigm in that kind of way. You aren't pushing a dialogue like that. Otherwise, you would have never done the utterly revealing documentary about Corey Good. You know, you, as other filmmakers, would have let that fall by the wayside and let it become a side story when, as I point out on the show all the time, and even whenever I had your co-filmmaker on to talk about that documentary, things like that need to be not just splayed open, like that's a wound that needs to be exposed. It needs to be brought forth, because if we don't confront that stuff head on, then more damage is done to experiencers. You know, situations like what happened with Corey Good make people come out with something that they believe may have happened in their life, which may be injurious to them. And if you continue that dialogue, it can do further psychological injury, further emotional injury, to take them further down that rabbit hole. So to know that, like, as he explained blue avians at conferences and people came up and they got a picture with him and signed a book and bought his movie and everything else, and they said, I experienced them too. And he hugged them and said, man, I'm glad somebody else had this experience. The whole time he was lying, you know? And making money off that, and making money off of commiserating with people who he knew he was lying to, you know. So all those things, I think, adversely affect our communities. They make people reticent to come forward with their stories eventually, you know.
Yeah, well, I think what also helps is the fact that people that build power within this community, they often wield that power and strike fear and intimidation into people that want to, you know, contest their claims and theories. Yeah. And that's not right. That's something that obviously was happening in, you know, the documentary. We profile some people that were part of the group and we're getting orders from up high and going to battle for this person, and that's very culty, you know. That's not what we want, especially when we're trying to discuss the ideas of UFOs and possible non-human intelligence existing and interacting with Earth, and there's like some secrecy there. You don't want cults forming.
That's right.
Because that literally gives justification for the mainstream to ignore you, to debunk you, to, you know, completely halt any progress that's being made that in a serious conversation.
That's right.
And, you know, it keeps happening. It's not just Corey. It's kinds of other interesting figures that are in the community that still exist today that are pushing their weight and trying to smother any dissension towards their own goals. So it's sad. It's kind of sickening because I'd like to think that people are better than this, but we're not.
No,
we're kind of like, you know, higher primates.
It's a hard-coded part of our DNA, sadly, Darcy.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. Just the whole tribalism mentality to begin with is a hard-coded part of our DNA, to fear the people on the other side of the trees, to fear the people who think differently than us. Like, man, that's why I loved reading X-Men, was the the whole concept of you fear what you don't understand. Mm-hmm. You know, like that is the pervasive thread in that series of comic books is people fear the mutants because they don't understand them, you know.
Yeah, and it's a great example of xenophobia and the government trying to squash the rise of a superior intelligence or being that's, you know, forming on Earth. I love X-Men too. But I think there is a truth to there being a bit of a tax with regards to confronting these issues. People don't want you to. People often think that you're a horrible person, or, you know, if you're challenging the person that they have invested so much time, money, and energy in thinking into, and then they start to see that collapse, they sometimes look at you as the enemy. And, you know, I've felt that since I published that documentary, and, it's probably the heaviest thing I've had to do is produce something along that line rather than exploring an idea that's outside the box, like just telling a straightforward UFO event documentary, that, you know, sheds light on the possibility that we're not alone and stuff. They seem to be the ones, like Transmedium, that people want to hear about.
Yep.
The other way, in terms of the community, they hate it, it seems, when you're going against the grain. And I think that's a problem.
It is.
It's also why there's so many like viral BS stories out there that are dominating the conversation often.
Yeah.
And when you look at those viral stories within the community, they're usually backed by pretty large entertainment networks like Corey Good was.
Yep.
And you got to wonder why. Like, why are they picking this story instead of the other stories that seem to have so many facts and documents and pictures and videos and, you know, the actual substance to prove that that is real.
Yeah.
Instead, they keep backing the same sort of charlatans over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, and, you know, it's interesting. As somebody who studied subliminal psychology, abnormal psychology, sociology, things like that, Darcy, there's a very easy means of control there. And that's why. And that was fully exposed in the latest cadre of New York Times articles that came out that got the UFO community in all kinds of kerfuffle about it when they found out that, yes, of course, black bag programs are going to use the tropes that you're putting out there as a means of cover. Why wouldn't they? You're doing their work for them.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming up with the narrative for them. So if they can wedge the story of their technology into that, they absolutely will. Because you're already creating the subterfuge for them. They don't have to do the work. They don't have to inject that into society and hopefully it takes root. it's yeah. already taken root. So let's yeah. use the root, you know, yeah. And that the one thing that we talk about regularly, not just as Curious Research, but as Curious Realm on the show, is that dangerous, dangerous point that you get to when the want of confirmation is married with confirmation bias, Darcy.
Mm-hmm.
And the prime example that I give right now on social media is Three Eye Atlas, where
oh gosh,
where you have a yeah. few articles and things
That's
like that
one.
Coming out there where there's some good scientific information in the post, but then it's married with an utterly fake AI image that has a CNN logo at the bottom and everything else. And,
exactly.
And people are buying yeah. that as real. And it's
that's
like,
a travesty.
We don't.
That's a failure. Yeah,
and you
it's
can,
too bad.
You can say
and I mean,
whatever
you can
you
talk
want,
to,
but
you can talk yeah. to scientists on both sides of the aisle regarding Three Eye Atlas. But the dominating headline in the community is that an alien spacecraft
right.
is coming.
Yeah, and once again,
and there's no evidence of that.
It's the beautiful job of science, and this is where I love Avi Loeb. Okay. The job of science is to hyperbolically hypothesize. They are supposed, like, let's take a leap. Like, let's go full Magellan. So the world ends there, right? Cool. Give me five ships. I'm going to sail past that point, and I'm going to come back. Let's see if it happens. If not, then I'm dead, and you can write it down in history that Magellan took five ships of people and fell off the edge of the earth.
Yeah.
But he came back. So that was a hyperbolic hypothesis
mm-hmm.
to buy and to go into.
Yeah,
but it worked
that's
out.
That's good science.
It worked out. That's good science. And that's
but in
the
2025,
thing.
People still think the earth is flat.
They do, Darcy. And the sad thing is also that that one point where he makes a hyperbolic 2% chance, there may be a small percentile chance here that this is what this is. That's what gets latched onto. That's what becomes the page-long story, not yeah. the other 90 minutes of the interview. Just the
well,
two or
I'm
three
sure
minutes of that.
I'm sure there were people that existed at the time when Magellan came back, and they were like, it's not him.
Yeah.
He's yeah. actually a ghost.
Yeah. This is the these work are, of the devil. These are, burn him.
These are, yeah, these are spirit people. They're clones.
Exactly. You know, it,
and people just won't unhinge themselves from a previously conceived theory that they've
that's
just
right.
completely fallen head over heels for. And that's the problem.
Well, and that's just it. And that once again, I think that is what you beautifully bring about, which I am one of those that if we are ignoring that, we are ignoring a huge part of the conversation. We're ignoring a huge part of the phenomenology, which is belief. And understanding. And, you know, we have to remember that science begins. I say it all the time on the show and whenever I speak at conferences. If you have seen something, if you questioned that something and you looked for more data, that's the first three steps of science, man. The science train left the station. Did you buy a ticket or are you eating a Twix at the station?
A lot of people forget to...
Because
you, the
experiencer, are now a citizen scientist.
Yeah.
You have followed the first three steps of science. Now, can you follow it through to the rest? And can yeah. you accept the data when given to you that somebody explains what's in your red circle? That doesn't remove your experience. You've only yeah. added to the known quantitatives of science, which only narrows further the phenomena that they're studying, you know? So you've
yeah,
actually
I think,
fully contributed.
I think that's correct. And the interesting thing right now in terms of UFOs, the UAP sort of community and issues, if you look outside of that in the mainstream, there are universities that are teaching courses now
yeah.
internationally on
yeah.
UFO and UAP information,
yeah.
right? There's a University of Mexico that my friend Dr. Gregory Rogers from the International UFO Bureau was lecturing the other day.
Yep.
And then, you know, there's universities in the United States that are teaching courses now. It's pretty interesting, you know.
Yeah.
If anything, you could definitely teach a sociology course on the UFO community.
That's right.
Because this is a group, a social group.
Absolutely. And it is an anthropological study.
Yeah, you could understand a lot about people by just looking at how everybody's interacting, you know? Yeah. I think it's still an important question. Are we alone in the universe? Have we been visited? Is this truth being concealed from the public by the military and intelligence communities of the world? And, you know, will we ever know the absolute truth on this so that we can progress?
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And you know, that kind of brings us to the new movie, Psychics and the Phenomenon, because there is an overlap between these things that happen, you know. And the one thing that I bring up all the time is, since quantum entanglement won the Nobel Prize, science has rapidly turned their glance over their shoulder to the world of the paranormal. And it's very interesting to see science, like the number of, I've said it for the longest time, being a member of IRVA, being a lifetime member of that, going to the conferences, being involved in the community. There are more commas and letters behind people's names in the remote viewing community than I think any other community, past UFO, UAP, past paranormal, past any of those. I think that there are more actual laboratory scientists and things like that interested in this phenomena and looking into it, and looking into its actual connections to things like orbs, stuff like what Chris Bledsoe is doing, you know, things like that, and how those phenomenologies are tied together. How did you first come to the world of remote viewing? How did you come to these topics to begin with? Did you come to them through filmmaking, or did they bring you to become a filmmaker, Darcy?
Well, I was already a filmmaker before remote viewing crossed my path. I've been focusing on stuff in a documentary feature length treatment, which has been Fringe, you know, Fringe theories and stories for a long time now. But when I started to look into this remote viewing phenomenon, I was actually brought in by Tracy Garbett Dolan. She had told me, well, first of all, I saw her lecture where she talked about, believe it or not, you just brought up quantum entanglement. She was talking about, you know, the idea of quantum science and quantum computing. And this was about 3 or 4 years ago now. She was saying, you know, what others have hypothesized, maybe the human brain is a room temp quantum computer.
Absolutely.
And that gives us very special perspectives and abilities, probably. And with remote viewing and psi ESP, extrasensory perception, maybe quantum science can eventually explain how we have this non-local connection, that we're able to peer out into the world psychically through our mind's eye and see things with beyond our physical senses, right? So I was intrigued by that, and she connected me with Russell Targ. She connected me, well, my friend Ryder Lee, who has a podcast called Raised by Giants, he connected me with Paul H. Smith. Joe McMonagall was featured by Chris Ramsey in his documentary, and Chris, I interviewed for this doc, and took the more UFO, UAP sort of non-human intelligence part of his expose. Because it was so great. It was the Mars perspective that Joe McMonagall remote viewed back in 1984, the year I was born.
Wow.
And you know, I have our amazing, you know, newly inducted champion of the UAP subject, Thomas Jane featured in the documentary. He was really kind enough to let me sit down and interview him and talk to him about the idea of telepathy, remote viewing, consciousness, and the UAP subject and the non-human intelligence question. And the guy is not just, you know, a wax mannequin. This guy is a wealth of knowledge on all of those things. He's hyper intelligent. He is an experiencer too. And I think, you know, eventually more people will learn that when he releases his story more publicly. But it was great making this documentary because I got to work with so many people I haven't worked before and tell this story in my own way, which is a little bit different from some other filmmakers' styles. But yeah, it was fun. Tracy is also a remote viewer.
Yep.
She's part of this world and she understands it and has successfully remote viewed some really interesting stuff in her time in this subject. So, you know, I have Dr. Jeffrey Tarrant in the documentary as well. I find him fascinating. He did some work on the telepathy tapes with Kai Dickens.
Yep.
A whole slew of other people, UAP related stuff. Dr. Jack Kasher, that interview I shot in 2015, I think.
Oh, wow.
So I've been sitting on that for a little while, but yeah, just really great testimony, great history. And, you know, if the psychic phenomenon is real, possibly this is a universal communication method. It's not just human.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. And that is something that we speak about on the show all the time whenever I talk about remote viewing at conferences, things like that. It is that concept of the spooky action at a distance. And I normally break it down to ninth grade science. Like, if you remember your ninth grade physical science class when you learned that we're all 90% empty space. You know, like you and I right now, despite distance, are sharing an electron field, Darcy, by all known physics. Like when you touch the desk, that is just a repulsion of electrons.
Mm-hmm. We're not actually touching it.
Yeah. Like it's like two magnets. It's like feeling the force of two magnets repelling each other is almost what it is by physics, you know. Yeah. And even when you get into that quantum realm of like, so I drop the crystal, does it ever actually touch the desk? Like you could into infinitum divide the distance between the crystal and the surface of that desk. So does it ever actually touch it? Does time even exist when that's just a construct that we have applied to physics so that we have something to be able to do calculations with? 'Cause you go somewhere else in the known universe, you go to the moon, you need a different watch. Like they had special clocks for the moon because gravity ain't the same, which means you are not experiencing time in the same way.
Yeah. That's true.
So yeah, like when you start getting into things like that are like made up parts of physics that we just have to universally agree on so that we can move forward with the equation.
Until we fully figure it out. Yeah. And then we can. Yeah. Definitely agree, you know, okay, that's fully proven now. But yeah, I do agree there is some peace in doing that to get to the next step, possibly, and then look back in a retrospect, say, okay, now we understand why that worked.
Yeah.
I would even say, you know, you talked about space. What if when we go to space, human beings, our psychic abilities are amplified? I question that.
Interesting.
Because Dr. Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut, he did a psychic experiment from space, and he experienced this epiphany consciousness moment, he says, where he felt literally one with the universe, and understood we were connected in, you know, every way to the universe. Even though we are small, we're connected to, you know, the whole stardust analogy.
Yeah.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. And he just had this grand realization. And perhaps astronauts get that when they're in space. That's like a something that happens. And maybe that's kind of, that would be cool if our destiny is to many people to get off planet and to experience that for ourselves one day.
Yeah.
All of us, you know, I think even when you see people that go up in a Blue Origin spacecraft with Jeff Bezos, a lot of people seem to, you look at William Shatner's reaction, you brought him up as your unexplained default guy on TV. And it's like William Shatner had that epiphany. You could see it on his face when he got off the Blue Origin. He was just absolutely blown away.
Yeah.
I think human beings are a combination between a field that observes other fields and manipulates fields, but also we're mechanical. Like we have to embrace both sides of the world, and that mechanical is the traditional physics world. And the field, you know, analogy is probably the quantum science field that we're just like really delving into now.
Yeah.
And there may be a chance that there is a higher intelligence out there that is not us, that exists in space, that exists in the galaxy, that observe us. And they are a field that can manipulate fields, right? So it's like, it just, and they are mechanical too. It just makes sense that you have to eventually understand there's a little bit of both going on there.
Yeah.
And I'm not like a spiritual guy, so that's kind of the way I look at it.
Absolutely. And that is all physics. That's all physics. And science. And you know, it's interesting. You say you're not a spiritual guy. All of those are very spiritual, deep concepts, Darcy. And one of the things that I bring up to people regularly, brought up Roman Catholic, former Catholic seminarian, all kinds of things. But I made it my mission to study all faiths, all religions, all philosophies. I have bookshelves full of the stuff. And Kabbalah was very, very interesting to me. Still is for probably about half my life now. I've been reading Kabbalah on and off. And there are two concepts in Kabbalah that I think scientifically boil down a lot of things. Number one, there is the concept of Had, God, the fact that each letter has a number attached to it, and that God is the number one. Without the number one, you can't count. No other number exists. Doesn't matter what digit you are, we can't get to you without the number one. And it's like, ooh, fascinating concept. Just in the Aristotelian prime mover way, without that number one, you can't count. So you don't even exist without the number one. Fascinating. Number two is the concept of manifestation. And the idea that because in that creation story, specifically the Jewish creation story of life being breathed into us uniquely, that means that apart from the animals on the earth, we take part in that creative vibration, the vibration, the voice, the breath that spoke the universe into being. We take part in that, which is why our words hurt more than our actions most of the time. Things like that, you know, which is why we're words able to speak things into being, why we're able to manifest things and move the world with our words, you know. So
I believe
the same thing you're talking about. But it's very interesting to see, like, that is a concept thousands of years old that reaches directly into Jewish mysticism. You know, these are things that are part
like
of
Gnostic, right?
Yeah. These are all parts of like Gnostic mystical traditions that have been around for thousands of years. And one of the slides that I have in my presentation about remote viewing being the first quantum science, the first science to really jump beyond that field in the lab into the quantum realm, is the image of the entangled photons, where it is literally a yin yang. There's no like, maybe it kind of looks like a yin yang. You know, if you squint and lean to the left, sure, I can see a yin yang. Like, no, it is a yin yang. And I'll look it up. I'll bring it up on screen here in a minute. But when you see that, and it's the fact of like, this is a concept that has been poo-pooed by people as like, you know, oh, you know, that's some woo-woo stuff. Everything else, you know, yin yang, all that, like, cool, Zen Buddhism, great. But when you see that expressed in physics, it's fascinating. And it's very, very easy to see where these connections come from. And I think, once again, why science has begun to look over their left shoulder at all of these fields that they've kind of kept in the fringe and off to the side for a very long time.
Well, we need science, and I think remote viewing is the most scientific ESP practice. You know, it's the best one, in my opinion, because then you're conducting repeatable, observable demonstrations of something.
That's right.
I would hope that IRVA invites debunkers in to practice. And to have them observe highly psychic people be able to do these targeted remote viewings.
Yeah.
Because then maybe they wouldn't be so skeptical and see, oh, crap, there's actually like a, you know, a set of protocols and a means and method to prove that this thing might exist. So,
yeah.
I like it. I think it's cool. And it hopefully one day is something that, maybe universities could teach it or something.
I hope so. And like, I'm from Houston, Texas. The one thing that I love, I have yet to be able to attend it because it happens every year during a 10-day client show. And if I could get that client to move the show, I would. Because Rice University has started the Archives of the Impossible.
Oh, yes.
In their religious studies department, and are starting to teach classes about that kind of stuff and bring it into their phenomenology courses in philosophy and epistemology and things like that, you know, because, and there's a reason, folks, why. Now, granted, don't get me wrong. The scientists that they brought in from the Vatican and everything else that NASA brought into their panel were absolutely actual scientists. Like, the Vatican has their own observatory, folks. They've been into this for a long time, as many of you conspiratorially know. However, they brought them in to talk about the existential question of what would happen to humanity should something, like, beyond the realm of the Brookings report, which was like, tell them nothing. Like, they will go into riot mode and burn themselves to the ground. Tell them nothing. But what would happen? Because you're talking about something that, even while the church and the pope have said like, this does not change the salvific act of one man to have interstellar brothers and sisters, doesn't change that. Like, that was a topic that people used to debate me on in the seminary all the time. Was like, oh, what, Jesus is just going to go around saving people world by world? So, you know, like, it leads to questions when you're talking about salvation, grace, and deep-seated religious belief, and how those two beliefs can butt up against each other. Even before I went to Cygames, man, like, I put every show I go to cover, I always put up boosted ads to help sell tickets, things like that. And I put up my first boosted ad. It was up for about a month. I didn't really look at anything. I saw an alert on Facebook from my brother. It was like, Randy Jordan commented on your post. And I went, and his only comment was, my God, these comments are gold. And it was like, oh crap, what have people been saying about my post for the last month? I had to shut commenting down, Darcy. People were talking about how this was demonic. It got thick quick, man.
Well, there's 221 million Christians in the population of the United States of America. You're up against the odds are against you in terms of having a conversation where they don't feel offended.
Yeah.
And the problem is that I do agree that sometimes religion can save people.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that it limits some people from going over the edge, and you will hear it over and over again. People say, you know, Jesus saved me or whatever. That's right. I don't disagree with that. I think that some people need religion in their lives for stability, but there's other people that have stability without that.
Yep.
And that dogma may limit their ability to progress things, progress conversations, to do, you know, challenging science and so on and so forth. You know, Galileo.
Yeah.
Proposed things that were against the dogma of the time, and he was thrown in jail for it.
That's
he
right.
suffered for being against the grain. But I think, again, it is a yin and yang thing, right? I think there's amazing people. One of my good friends is a pastor, and yep. I'm not religious, but I love that guy. You know,
yeah.
I would go to bat for him.
Same.
But he would do the same for me because he knows I'm a good person without the devotion to a faith. I just care about people. I care about the truth. That's really what I want in my life, you know?
Yeah.
So the whole demon thing, that is fear and programming to, you know, push away from the unknown or push away from the fringe. And
yeah.
I don't think you need to do that. I think you can think outside the box. You can engage with these things on the fringe and not call them demons and evil. You can actually look at those things and realize, hey, maybe there's something scientific we can find from this that will help us down the road, you know, get us through a hard time in our society. Who knows?
Yeah. And I think that is one of the beautiful things that you do with your documentaries is you present these topics in a very non-confrontational way, which is hugely important. Like prime example is my wife knows the remote viewing community. Like she met quite a few of them at Psy Games. Like she's met Michelle Fried here at my house, you know, all kinds of things. For her to sit and not just like walk by a documentary, but for her to stop and listen and go, oh, interesting. These are not the conversations she's prone to have. You know, these are not the things that, like I said, I sit and watch this stuff incessantly, constantly in the background. Mm-hmm. It's not like her to sit down, take in 15 minutes of it, things like that, because of the slant that most of them have. They aren't presenting things in an open-minded, necessarily, point of view of, well, let's explore this thought concept, what if? They're presenting it in the ancient aliens way of, ancient alien theorists say yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Which is amazing
programming and very entertaining, absolutely. But it also sells things as a fact, not as a hypothesis.
Right,
you
right.
know? And you maintain the hypothesis through all of this, and you maintain the open-ended questions through all of this of how do we get this further? And like this piqued my interest, you know, how did the creation of this documentary specifically, because once again, you've done numerous documentaries that I think touch on this, where this has been a touchstone point, you know, or something that's mentioned along with,
mm-hmm.
but how did doing this documentary specifically, did it open your mind more? Was your mind closed to begin with? Did it change your mind about remote viewing or methods of remote viewing that maybe you didn't have before?
Yeah, so I think remote viewing is real without myself actually practicing it.
Yeah.
Just based off of seeing that there's so much success that has been had throughout history with remote viewers, even Chris Ramsey, a new remote viewer that went up to the fourth protocol in his testing and found success. You know, everybody may have some innate psychic ability to a certain degree.
Yep.
And I figure that based on ufology and all of these reports within that community from experiencers, contactees, or abductees, one of the common themes is that the non-human intelligence that they interact with, or even people that just see a craft, sometimes they just see a craft in the sky and they feel like they're getting thoughts or words beamed right into their head, like communication.
Yeah.
It's possible that in the future, we may not need to express ourselves by using our vocal cords, our mouths, to form words, and we can just send thoughts directly to each other's brains. You know, that's the mechanical side of things. Your brain is what holds your consciousness, in my opinion. And your brain also holds your abilities to navigate the world and be successful in certain things. You know, there's somebody that has a brain that's meant for being a NBA superstar. Well, they have the mechanical equipment surrounding that brain, right? They have incredibly fast reflexes, good insights, and a body that's built for stamina and built to take a lot of damage. I would finish in the lower percentile in that sort of profession. Instead, my brain is made for telling stories and communicating my ideas with film.
Yeah.
And I nerd out on the UFO subject or the fringe theories that are out there, including this psychic phenomenon. So I guess, you know, why not, if there's a non-human intelligence out there, if they have a brain that holds their consciousness and they are a field that's manipulating other fields, are they not able to communicate psychically with us? And, you know, you look at cases like Betty and Barney Hill.
Yep.
You look at, you know, cases like
Travis Walton.
Travis Walton, it just goes on and on.
Yeah.
The ones that seem to be more credible, they still come with that story of a intelligence that's not us that communicates telepathically.
Yeah. Yeah. That is.
And I wonder too, if science is catching up to that. I mean, what's the mind to skull technology that people are always talking about now.
And V2K.
Yeah.
Yeah. Voice to skull.
V2K. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Voice to skull technology. I mean, what if that gets perfected? And when people are seeing these UFOs and they're getting that kind of communication, what is that? You know, perhaps we make a breakthrough in the future and we're able to communicate around the world with each other with V2K.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that is, I talk to a lot of people in the targeted individual community. That is one of the huge causes of this show that I am actively trying to do a documentary about, Darcy.
Oh, cool.
Because it's out there. And like, I remember that I just turned 50, but I remember the stories from late junior high, early high school, from the first Iraq war, of the platoon of soldiers that all heard the voice of Allah in their head tell them to put their guns down, and they all surrendered.
Get out of here.
Not even joking.
Crazy.
And yeah, like here's an article from Live Science. This is a few years ago, but talking lasers, the beam that messages, that puts messages in your head, like that's 2019. They're talking about lasers that may be able to put messages in your head, things like that.
Wait, that looks like something Trump would use on rioters.
You know, that's the thing.
Maybe. Is
that we know that we have numerous sonic weapons. That's what I said about the whole Area 51 Naruto run to begin with, was like, make no mistake, they have zero reason to use lethal bullet one. They have LIDAR systems. They have all kinds of systems that, like what they use for crowd control, where you see the Humvee with the radar dish on top, where they are focusing microwaves on you and it feels like your skin is on fire and you just fall to the ground.
Yeah, Havana syndrome.
Pain. Exactly. And there are people
like it seems like all this stuff is quietly being tested out. And
well, and at least being admitted now, because there have been people for 20 something years complaining about Havana syndrome type symptoms.
Right. And like, what if the war of the future is fought by drones and psionic weapons?
Absolutely. And hey,
you don't
the
even
one
have
thing,
to like they could just pick an area of the map from a satellite and just bombard it with this stuff. And we're cooked. You know what I mean? We'd probably go nuts and die. Who knows?
And you know, one of the big things I bring up all the time is the article about holograms that you can feel. 3D holograms that can be touched, grabbed, poked. You can feel them haptically, like that at the Psy games, wasn't there? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can hear them.
That's crazy.
So the idea of Project Bluebeam, like alive and well, Jack, alive
Dude,
and well.
People are going to be having sex with holograms.
What,
I know it.
What people forget about Project Bluebeam is that there was another part after that. You know, if they don't use a fake alien invasion, they'll probably fake something like the Second Coming to catalyze the religious. And it's very interesting to me to see how religious some sides of the UFO UAP community have really become when it comes to the light orbs and everything else, and then being
it always
angelic.
Dominates the conversation. That's for sure.
It's one of those, like, you're playing right into the hands of Project Bluebeam. You're decrying Project Bluebeam, but you're literally helping, like, you are smoothing the foundation for that wall right now.
Yeah,
as you have that side, like, of the conversation.
Yeah, that's true. Project Bluebeam, I guess. If that does happen,
These are the technologies that we're literally looking at, though, that actively exist. Holograms that you can touch, holograms that you can hear. So if a laser can vibrate your head and put a voice in it, I mean, good God, I actively have an AI trained to my voice, Darcy, to narrate things.
Cool.
Cost me $5 a month.
What are you using, 11 labs?
Yep. Cost me $5 a month, and I trained it with 23 minutes of me talking to a guest, just taking 30 seconds, 1 minute, everything else. Yeah. So if they're allowed to tap a phone call, whatever, who says that they haven't assembled an AI of your voice and they aren't shooting that thing right into your head, giving you the thoughts in your own voice? You know,
wow.
These are the disturbing possibilities of this technology, man, that are out there.
Or could frame you.
Yeah.
They can publish videos with
deepfake,
AI voices,
deepfake,
all
kinds
of.
I mean, this is the technology that literally allowed James Earl Jones to copyright his voice in perpetuity. Like, he'll be Darth Vader till the end of time. And his family will get royalties for it. Like, this technology changed Hollywood. It is what burgeoned most of the Hollywood writers' strike.
Yeah.
Was the AI technology to be able to do that kind of stuff. You know?
Yeah.
Because it changes it. It makes it to where, like, hey, if you have 30 hours of James Earl Jones doing AR in a studio, like, you don't need James Earl Jones anymore to do voiceover.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
just got to train the AI.
Yeah. Off footage that you already have.
I have. I use AI. And
absolutely.
It's a tool, right? I don't think we should fear using AI.
No.
Be careful, maybe. Be smart. But it's something you can take advantage of.
Surely.
And why wouldn't you try to use a technology that's going to help you? The other thing is, right, like, quite frankly, you also have to look inward, right?
Yeah.
You also have to try to do things that are a healthy balance between, you know, disconnecting from technology and embracing technology. You got to kind of work together in that way, move together in that way. Otherwise, you're going to get left behind.
Oh, absolutely. Opinion. No, like even creatively, I use AI. I use all kinds of AI tools in my creative work for audio, video, things like that. Even as a musician, there are some things that I utilize with AI. But and like with Curious Research, right down here in my rack is a brand new server that I built that has like 2 data center grade video cards, like 2 16 gig data center cards, that is being trained offline. That AI is fully offline, and it is being trained specifically for paranormal research and stuff like that. So, like,
are they Intel Arc, or
I'm using a few different LLMs, but I'm using an open source software to run them without the website interface.
Right.
You know,
is that like DeepSeek?
DeepSeek, things like that. A few of those. I've got probably about 15, 20 different language models downloaded. But being able to go in and create something and basically like create a Watson that I am training on frequencies. Like this one is totally about frequencies and binaural beats, and in order to do that, though, I have to teach it like frequency math and what the infrared spectrum is and what the whole radio spectrum is, and like train it like a child from the ground up with all the background data, you know.
But that's so cool.
Otherwise, it's pulling everything from online, and it's going to pull the same crap that you find online.
Yeah, you know? Contaminate and your child's mind.
Exactly. And that's what I tell people all the time. Like, if you are worried about ChatGPT taking over the world, make no mistake, it will be as smart as the average person reading the internet. Now, take that as frightening or as good as you want.
Yeah.
That's either a frighteningly horrible thing or a really good thing.
Yeah.
Because,
I guess,
yeah.
Speaking of binaural beats, have you spoken to Tyler, who goes by Astral on Twitter? He produces some binaural beats. I think he was at IRVA.
I will have to reach out to him. There are a few people that, especially at Cygames, that I hooked up with, because I actively make binaural beat music and things like that. Like, I was set up directly.
He was at Cygames too.
I'm sure I may have met him, because I was set up between the frequency experience guy with the whole mask that you put on and everything else. And then Monroe Institute was on the other side of me while I was doing my interviews and all that kind
That's
of stuff.
That's a good sandwich.
So it was a good sandwich. It was a great, great week of show. And really one of those, like, I love meeting other binaural beat musicians.
Yeah, I got to introduce you.
Oh, that'd be great, man. I would love that, because I love that kind of stuff. And like, I've actually, like, the targeted individual community is really what took, I had been making binaural beat music myself, just kind of privately. And my research associate, Dr. John Hall, had recommended me to a few people and was like, hey, if you don't mind, he was like, have you ever thought about doing like customized binaural beats? And I was like, I've thought about it. I just haven't figured out like how to bust out into that market. And he sent a few private clients to me who were targeted individuals, where it's like, do you think you can formulate something to help alleviate their symptomology? And I was like, well, let's get them on like an hour-long phone consultation. Let's talk about what's happening to them. Let's talk to their family about what's happening to them, what they see that maybe the person that's experienced doesn't see. You know, mm-hmm. And let's get some things down to kind of make a customized path. And once I did a few of those, like, I decided to make a generalized track for targeted individuals. And that began my whole targeted mind series, which is like, there's the second one, which is for experiencers of the third and fourth kind to help shed their PTSD of alien experience, of being in presence of that craft and retying them to earthbound frequencies, things like that. So it's been a beautiful journey to kind of go down the road of creating specialized music for experiencers in this realm. My last album was actually Remote Viewer, to help people get their brain in the space for remote viewing sessions. So
very cool.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. It's fun stuff. And for me, stuff like that is my contribution back to these communities. You know,
I like it
the same way your documentaries are for you. What are you looking at for upcoming documentaries? We have you for a little while longer.
Yeah.
What are you looking at next, man? Because you've explored all kinds of things during the length and breadth of your work. So what's up next?
Yeah, I'm focusing on another sort of controversial story next. That should be released the end of this year, I would suppose. And yeah, I think it's an important story to tell. Cautionary tale, and also a fun story to tell, because people, you know, can enjoy. There's a bit of comedy to it. Mm. There's a bit of, you know, reality to truth spoken in it, and just entertainment. It's got all of it. It's over 2 hours long right now, so it's going to be a big one.
Yeah. Wow. That is awesome. And I don't want you to give away too much more or anything like that, because we, of course, want to have you back on before that comes out so that we can help promote it for you. Everything else, that is what we try to do, is expose our audience to the people that create these things, to the and, you know, like I told you before the show, a lot of my mission is filtering the water that we all drink from instead of digging more rabbit holes and kicking dirt into it. And a lot of that comes with exposing my audience to people that are making good film, people that are writing good books and good research into these topics. You know, I could have just experiencers on 24/7 and just tell people's experience stories and probably get a whole lot more listens and views than I do. But for me, it's the fact of having the conversations with the people who are doing the deep research, and sometimes even disagreeing with them, because that's the conversation, you know?
Yeah. It's a more authentic conversation if you can disagree on things and find some kind of balance in that. You know, I've been a critic of the Nazca mummies. Everybody thinks that they're digging aliens out of the ground, ancient aliens, but I don't believe that.
If there's anything that I could trust humans. Jaime Muson with, maybe I would trust him. And that makes me sad, because, like, as a child of the 80s, like, and living in Texas, Jaime Muson was all over the news. In my friends' houses who watched Telemundo and everything else, like, they saw all these reports all the time as they happened in real time as he covered them.
I previously worked with Jaime Maussan. I thought, you know, this guy's very interesting, and I think he's done some interesting stuff in terms of expanding the conversation down in Latin America. Definitely valuable, definitely important, but sometimes there's a big sort of corporation behind some of these stories that are being propagated.
Yeah.
And it's no longer about the truth. It's about what is the most entertaining.
Yeah.
And sucks to see that.
Well, and you know, man, that's where I've fallen with, well, the first set of mummies, with the fairy mummy and body, with the second set of mummies, with the mummies with eggs in them, with the Bugasphere, which kind of looks like I have some maker friends that would be very upset if some of their work looked like that.
There's the Booga Tic Tac now too. I don't know if you saw that.
I have.
And I mean, it's just rampant right now. There's a slime mold alien in Panama.
Yeah, and that was pretty well debunked as just like a science experiment. Like, here's how you make that happen with a couple of reactants in a petri dish, you know. And it was pretty interesting to see that. But yeah, you know, it's one of those.
Yeah, I mean, like, even Third Phase of Moon made some great animated short horror clips and alien, you know, clips and UFO clips for their channel early on, and they gained tons of attention. They went viral, but, you know, were those real?
Well, and that becomes it. And that's something that I try to explain to people all the time. I just gave a presentation at Symposium of the Strange last month about examining data, the difference between data and evidence, and the very important part of that. But also the fact of, hey, when you're looking on social media, when you're looking online, if it says anonymous participant, take that into heavy consideration.
Yeah.
All right. That means somebody doesn't want. And that may also be because, hey, they've come out with things before and they've been fully harassed by people. So I get it. However, that should be something to take into your data set. Forced perspective is a massive one. Massive one. And this is the example that I normally give, Darcy. I'll play it here for you so that you can watch it. But this is one that I normally play on the show and give the example of, if I put this on social media and just said, hey, you know, I recorded this in my backyard last night. And what you're seeing for the listeners out there, folks, is a dark screen with a large orb-shaped object with black in the middle, and it's undulating and moving, and you can see things like it's flashing colors and moving from like 11 o'clock down to 5 o'clock across the screen. Now, if I just posted that, said, I recorded this in my backyard, I would get tons of people who were like, man, I've seen that too. Hey, I've recorded that. I've photographed that. Now, if I give that same piece of data and say, wow, I recorded this in my backyard last night. I was facing southeast. It was 8:30 p.m. My camera was this. I was using this kind of lens. Like, if I said that I had my Canon camera on my 8-inch Meade telescope, you know?
Yeah.
The
whole context surrounding the video would paint a better picture. I totally agree.
That's just it. It's the fact
the key to that is spectacle usually goes the furthest, right?
That's right.
Entertainment goes the furthest. That's the viral stuff. Anything that's kind of boring. And here's a perfect example. The recent UAP hearings that happened in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Two videos were shown.
Yep.
One video was boring. It was another Tic Tac that Alejandro presented and gave testimony behind and explained what it was like before it came out of the water and how he observed it afterwards and what's in the FLIR camera footage. The Hellfire missile video is not boring. It's exciting. Yep. It's entertaining. And that got all the attention. Everybody's talking about the Hellfire missile video. Because it's obviously polarizing too.
Sure.
Like, some people think it looks like a balloon being popped by a $100,000 asset. And other people think, are firm believers, that it's a UFO that's absorbed the blast or something like that. I've read all kinds of weird comments on people's perspective of the Hellfire missile. But that is the entertaining video, because that is the viral video.
Yeah.
Because it has action in it. It's not boring. And the boring video should have been spotlighted more. Hey, we've got another Tic Tac. We've got another incident that happened around the same time, and another credible observer that watched this and has testimony about it and the video to go with it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
No one cares about that. Everybody's watching the Hellfire missile pop a balloon.
Well, and you know, even with that, a partial story, you know, because the average viewer doesn't know that there is a Raptor version of the Hellfire missile that has no explosive warhead. That is an inertial option made to take things out instead of blowing it up, just punch a hole in it and disable it.
Knock it down.
So it has blades that pop out of the side in order to take care of the target.
Maybe that's what happened
Which when you look at the video and you see that missile kind of skirt around the target, it seems like the edge of the blade caught it. That's what flew stuff off of it, and the missile kept going.
Oh, and so that
But you got to know that there's an inertial package option of that missile.
Interesting.
It didn't disable the warhead, because if it did, what they would have, there's an arm disarm system on all warheads, things like that. So they would know that that system was disarmed before impact.
Right.
And they would have that data.
Well, would a soft target detonate a Hellfire missile anyways? Well, like, Okay.
I would tend to think so. If anything, you know, frequently those things explode before impact, because other part to bring up is also the fact of the Hellfire missile is not meant to engage air to air. The Hellfire missile is designed to engage from air to ground.
Okay. It strikes ground objects. Interesting.
So two high important things to bring up about the package being used in that video.
And so the Raptor is also a state-of-the-art drone?
No. The Raptor is the name of a state-of-the-art drone, absolutely. But this is just the Hellfire Raptor missile.
Okay. And they think that it was a drone missile, basically?
Basically, the fact that it was probably fired from a drone package.
Okay.
So fired from a Raptor or something like that. But hey, you could have been looking at footage of a test. And me and my investigator, Mike Turber, have held one of the things I have on my website is a knowledge vault full of declassified government materials, full of patents, things like that. One of the things that was patented and released shortly before the Tic Tac was an actual laser chaff system made for the F-18 platform that is a forward laser pod that projects an infrared laser object, like an infrared hologram, that is larger and hotter than the aircraft projecting it. So that heat-seeking missiles follow that. And once again, they normally explode in proximity to their target once they're within a certain distance, not on impact, because you're trying to hit a moving target.
Right.
In the air.
You
want to explode near it, not necessarily upon impact. Otherwise, you could just breeze right past it with an armed missile.
Okay.
You know?
I'm learning here.
So these are things that, you know, but the fact that that laser pod exists and every single image that we have seen of all of these things are from the forward-looking infrared pod.
Right. Well, the FLIR camera system is usually on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The craft that deployed.
Sure. But there's also a regular pod on there. There's a regular camera pod at the same time.
Yeah.
So why aren't we seeing the regular footage of it? Why only the infrared footage?
That's true.
That's just something to bring up. Do we know that it wasn't a blue team versus blue team situation? Very interesting how the Air Force ended up coming on to a Navy carrier and taking tapes away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things like that that just kind of skirt. Was it maybe a test of not only a new passive radar system, but also this other system? Because this system can give you a fleet of 50 things that can be seen on radar, that can be seen on infrared. all kinds of stuff. So, like, it could make, like, five fighters pop up around you, not just one. So, interesting. But these are all patents that are out there. This is technology that has been released, much like the patent from Lockheed Martin for the nuclear reactor that is big enough to fit inside of an F-16.
Oh, okay, yeah. A micronuclear reactor. Yeah. Well, I mean, you already have...
Oh,
nuclear
sure.
reactors that are inside of submarines.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
So we
submarines,
know that they've
but
been
we're talking
miniaturizing
about big
that technology for a while.
Yeah. And big enough to fit inside of an F-16 platform. That means about
that's
the
crazy.
Size of your average car.
Yeah.
About the size of an average family sedan. So when you're talking about the technology it would take to warp time, you'd need a nuclear reactor to generate that much energy. Guess what they have in that size platform now? And for at least the last 8 years, according to that patent.
Yeah.
You know? So
that's like a dirty bomb when you shoot it out of the sky.
Might be. It would definitely be. You know? So you wonder why they aren't shooting them out of the sky. I even said that about when people were like, why aren't they shooting drones out of the sky in New Jersey? I'm like, dude, you're talking about a 30-pound lithium battery falling out of the sky on fire.
Mm-hmm. You make a good point.
You would be catching fires all over the place that you can't put out because it's a lithium fire.
Yeah.
Like,
so true.
You would just have falling ordnance everywhere.
Yeah. So. And then they also had speculation and, you know, discussion about nuclear teams or, bomb sniffing teams that were all around New Jersey at the time.
Yep.
Probably because of that. Like, if one of these drones does get shot down,
yeah,
then you've got like lithium radiation all over property there. So who knows? It's like,
yeah,
that's a really, I mean, the drones are apparently going over Denmark now.
Yep.
Warfare of the future, right?
Yeah. No, and that's just it. That's just it. When you start looking at all these things, it's interesting to see how the conversation is driven. It's interesting to see NHI being brought up in the halls of Congress. You know, it's interesting to see psychic control and possible telepathic control of craft being brought up in Congress in the second round of hearings. You know, it's interesting to see all this stuff once again, confluencing together and coming together and filmmakers like you that are helping stitch these things together and show their connection in a good way, in a proper way, not necessarily a conspiratorial fear based kind of way, but just a, hey, everybody, you may want to take a look at the way these things are connected. And then Edward R. Murrow style, here's the facts, only the facts. You make up your mind, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I try to.
You do a good job of it.
Thank you.
Once
appreciate
again,
that.
There's a lot of them that like state a slanted purpose at the very beginning and go through every means possible to either cherry pick data or to use a crowbar by which to wedge that data into the spot and then hammer it into place, you know? And you don't do that. It's very refreshing to see that. And I love to see somebody that is making good, good content and asking good, hard questions along the way, man. And having that properly capital S skeptic mindset of, yes, I'm here to present a story. I'm here to present an angle on a story. But I'm also here to accept new data and have my mind changed along the way.
Certainly. Yeah, otherwise you're just repeating your same confirmation bias, and I think that kind of ends up being insanity, right?
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. It doesn't help move the conversation or humanity along. So I want to thank you for your time, Darcy. Thank you so much for spending extra time with us today. You are always welcome on this show, just so you know. Even if you see something within the communities that you think needs to be addressed, you feel free to get at me, because that's quite literally what we do, is try to expose these things so that we can all have a bigger, deeper conversation that's more connected and less troublesome, you know.
Thank you. So I appreciate the invite. I appreciate
absolutely
the conversation we had today, and thanks for checking out the film. And yeah, I'll keep in touch, man.
Well, before we let you go, I mean, it is time for shameless self-promotion. So please do let everybody know where they can go to purchase or rent The Psychic Phenomenon, where they can go to find all of the films by Darcy Weir and Occult Journey Productions.
Yeah, Amazon Prime, Google Play, Apple TV for this one. And a lot of my films are on the same platforms. Tubi TV, that's a free option in the United States, Australia, Canada, and a few other countries. And then, YouTube, there's a bunch. I've got a documentary about Puerto Rico called Puerto Rico's UAP. That is basically a bit of a reproduction of my transmedium Puerto Rico's UFOs, just some added stuff. And that's on my YouTube channel at Occult Journeys. My studio site is occultjourneys.com. On Twitter, I'm at Occult Journeys. On Facebook, Darcy Weir, and Instagram, Darcy Weir Films. So if people want to connect, have a chat sometime, I'm down.
Fantastic. Well, man, once again, thank you so, so much. I greatly appreciate the time today. It's been an amazing conversation. I cannot wait to have you on again and again and again to talk about these things, because once again, that is, I think that is what moves and catalyzes our communities more than anything else, is that open conversation. That even going to the 9/11 conference a couple weeks ago, one of my favorite things there was the dissenting opinions panel, man. Like, they had a panel of investigators up on stage debating each other and their points.
Where does that happen? The 9/11
that happened in DC. It will be in New York next year for the 25th anniversary. If you need connections,
I'm going.
You let me know.
That I'd love to see that.
I've got goosebumps right now, man, because it was one of those.
And 9/11 is actually a theme in my new documentary. So
awesome, yeah, man. If you need some connections in that community, you let me know. I've got tons of great people that are like
cool
physicists. Architects, engineers, things like that are who was presenting at this.
I love it.
It
Loose
was
Change
stuff.
Was a great documentary when I was growing up.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience. While you are online, everybody, checking out everything from Darcy Weir and Occult Journeys, make sure to stop on by Amazon Prime, get the new movie Psychic Phenomenon. And of course, while you're online, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That's where you can find our events page. That has all of the playlists from the events that we go out and cover. The 9/11 conference was literally our 25th event to go out and cover in that kind of way. So stop on by, check that out. And of course, curiousresearch.org, that is the home of our research arm. That is where you can go to find our free tools page. If you are an investigator into the world of the paranormal, UFOs, UAPs, cryptozoology, the free tools page gives you everything, like Forensically Beta, Sonic Visualizer, places where you can go and analyze your footage, your photographs, your audio, absolutely free. It also has, we're adding tons of stuff, FOIA request forms, all kinds of things, like direct links to be able to get to those. So stop on by, check that out. CuriousResearch.org, everybody, is the website. Thank you so much, as always, folks, for your time tonight, for your open hearts, your open minds. That is what makes the conversation. And without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media family of podcasts. For more shows and members-only content, visit groundzeroplus.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.